Committee to come to order. We have one bill coming before us today. It is Senate Bill 5. It's the Nally Kid Care. We have quite a few people signed up to testify. We do have everyone present except for Senator Ellis, and he's with the finance people now. He will join us later. We have Senator Dyson, Vice Chair Senator Egan, and Senator Morris, myself, Betty Davis. We're going to go right into this testimony because there are several things that's going on. The task force for Medicaid is also meeting at the same time, and I have promised that I will take Karen Perdue's testimony. First, we'll start off with you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Perdue. I'm the president and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital Nursing Home Association. For those of you who are, I know you're familiar with ASHA, we have been involved in healthcare policy since 1953 when the association was established, and we represent Alaska's hospitals and nursing homes. ASHA has consistently supported Denali Kid Care and continues to support the passage of Denali Kid Care today. We, of course, are involved in children's lives, both at the delivery and sometimes when children need acute medical care. So it's very helpful to parents to have the coverage. It's very concerning when you have a sick child or a very sick child and the coverage is not available. People often get in a situation where they can't pay their bills. Their bills are written off, or they pay on a very slow basis, and they carry a very heavy debt. So what Denali Kid Care has done is allowed, over the past several years, families to seek medical care at the most appropriate time for their children. I think we were disappointed in the veto. We hope that there will be some sort of work that can be done that will allow the bill to move forward from the governor's perspective as well. I would just note that it was 14 years ago that I was involved as commissioner in fashioning Denali Kid Care, and many of you I work with during that time, and it was a very a good move that the legislature made at that time, and it consistently remains that way, a very good legacy for children in Alaska. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions? We thank you for taking this time to come in, and I also appreciate that you have allowed me to take her testimony so that she may go to the task force meeting. But now we'll go back to the regular process, and I'm going to ask that my staff person, Mr. Obermeyer, come up to give the overview of the bill, and then we will begin the testimony at that point. As you know, this bill passed the House and the Senate last year and was vetoed by the governor. So we're bringing the bill back the way it was at the time that it was vetoed, and I'll let Mr. Obermeyer give an overview of the bill.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Obermeyer, staff to Senator Davis. And the bill before you, Senate Bill 5, is an act relating to the eligibility requirements for medical assistance for certain children and pregnant women. Senate Bill 5 increases and restores to the original levels established 14 years ago, as it was just mentioned, the qualifying income eligibility standard to 200% of the federal poverty level for the state children's health insurance program, SCHIP, called Denali Kid Care in Alaska. Alaska, as one of the nation's wealthiest states, is only one of four states which funds its SCHIP program below 200% federal poverty line. This bill makes health insurance accessible to an estimated 1,277 more uninsured children and 225 pregnant women in Alaska. And these, as noted in the fiscal note, are the people that were dropped from the system when the level was at 170, was reduced to 175% and frozen in 2003. Denali Kid Care is an enhanced Medicaid reimbursement program receiving up to 70% federal matching funds. Denali Kid Care serves an estimated 7,900 Alaska children and remains one of the least costly medical assistance programs in the state, at a cost of about $1,700 per child with full coverage, including dental care, which is about 20% of the cost overall of senior coverage. Intervention and preventative care will greatly increase Alaska's children's health and yield substantial savings to uninsured patients, to the state and public private sector hospital emergency rooms, which must admit indigent and uninsured patients for non-emergency treatment. It is estimated per the Kaiser Foundation that 24,000 uninsured children in Alaska with a medical need are five times as likely not to have a regular doctor as insured children and four times more likely to use emergency rooms at a much higher cost. A similar bill was overwhelmingly passed with bipartisan support in 2010 by the legislature. Governor Parnell subsequently vetoed the bill over concern of increased eligibility to Denali Kid Care, which would require an increase in state-funded induced terminations of pregnancies. Medicaid funds 51% of all births in Alaska. In order to continue receiving federal funding for the state Medicaid program, of which Denali Kid Care is part, and in order to comply with state law, constitutional provisions, and the Alaska Supreme Court rulings, the state must provide medical services for pregnant women, including medically necessary terminations, as well as prenatal and postpartum care. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services estimated that no more than 10% or 22 more induced terminations would result, with minimal expense from the increase in eligibility for Denali Kid Care to 200% federal poverty guideline. Induced terminations under Denali Kid Care cost about $384,000 annually, or less than 0.18%, or one-fifth of 1% of the $217 million Denali Kid Care budget. While the governor understandably is concerned about mushrooming costs of the state Medicaid program, Denali Kid Care, which is about 18% of the $1.2 billion total state Medicaid budget, should not be among first cuts at the expense of Alaska's most vulnerable children and pregnant women. Increasing eligibility for Denali Kid Care to 200% under SB 5 is uncomplicated, manageable, and could take effect immediately with prompt implementation by DHSS. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yes, Senator Myers.
Madam Chair, I'll ask the same question I asked the last time we heard this a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, if indeed this is the same bill and we still have the same governor, isn't this bill destined for the same fate? Maybe you could update us on your discussions with the governor in trying to meet some of his concerns that he had with the bill the last time that caused him to veto it.
I'd be glad to address that question. When we came to session at the beginning of the session, I did have a brief meeting with the governor, and at that time, it was agreed that there were some things we're going to agree on, some things we're not. But that particular piece of legislation, he felt the same way about it, and he has not had a change of mind as far as I know. But I have talked with the commissioner and some other people within the department, and I know that they are trying to come up with a solution that might be acceptable to me and my committee, as well as the public and the governor, if that could be done. However, I can't continue to hold my bill back, and so up to this point, I haven't had any hearings on it. We're almost about to run out of time. I would like to at least move that bill from my committee to finance, and so for that reason, I have put it on the schedule. I did contact the commissioner's office to let them know that I was going to move forward on the bill, and I still expect for them to get back with me and share with me what possible they might be able to do. And that's the latest information that I have at this point.
Okay. Madam Chair, then it sounds like the discussions are still ongoing?
Ongoing in the sense that they're talking, but not with me, yes. They're going to get back to me once they have some possible solutions or suggestions on how we might be able to have the governor feel okay with the bill.
Very good. Thank you.
Yes, you're quite welcome. Is Mr. Sherwood here? He is back there. And you know that we do have the Medicaid Task Force meeting today, and I wasn't thinking that we would have anyone here to speak to this bill, but Mr. Sherwood is there. Before I take testimony, I would like for him to come forward, please. Mr. Sherwood, were you just here to answer questions? Were you going to make a statement, or were you willing to?
Madam Chair, for the record, John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm here primarily to answer questions. I can confirm that we are continuing to analyze possible options. I think, we're not ready to have the discussion yet, but we are still working on the issue to see if there are some possibilities that might be available to us.
And the other question I guess I would ask of you, since you were there, moving this bill forward at this time would not interfere with the conversation that you're having, because it has other committees on referral, so you're not asking that the bill not be heard or not that it stay in one committee and wait, because we're running out of time, really.
Madam Chair, to the best of my knowledge, we don't have a position on the movement of the bill. I think we do know how the governor feels about this bill as it stands now.
Of course. I think we all have that understanding, and you have clarified what I tried to say to Senator Myers about the conversation is being held, and so I do feel comfortable with what I'm doing at this point to continue on the line of information from those people that support this bill or not support this bill. Are there any questions you might have of Mr. Sherwood, since we do have him here? I think he probably wants to get back to that meeting. Is that not right?
Madam Chair, I can remain here if the committee would like, should other questions come up. I'm sort of the person that's been tasked with covering this while others are at that task force.
All right, we appreciate that. No questions at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We can go into the public testimony then. Hattie Chapman. Would you state your name for the record, please, and who you represent?
For the record, my name is Katie Chapman, and I'm here on behalf of Planned Parenthood. And for the record, I'd like to read from my notes here. Planned Parenthood Votes Alaska, a member organization representing over 1,800 Alaskans, supports the increase in Denali KidCare eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty level as outlined in Senate Bill 5. Even in these hard economic times, a Denali KidCare income eligibility increase is good policy for the health and economics of our state. An increase in Denali KidCare eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty level reflects sound fiscal policy, as research shows that preventative care, such as that received through Denali KidCare, has a positive return on investment. For example, children and pregnant women without access to health care are four times more likely to use expensive emergency room care for medical treatment. Since the federal government covers almost 65% of the entire cost of Denali KidCare, the additional financial exposure associated with a return to 200% of federal poverty level is nominal compared to the long-term expenses the state of Alaska will most likely incur if these vulnerable children and pregnant women continue to be denied access to health care. And also, increasing Denali KidCare to 200% of Alaska's federal poverty level simply brings it back up to its original level approved by the legislature in 1999. And finally, Alaska continues to be one of the few states that does not prioritize health care for low-income children and pregnant women. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions at this time? None. Well, thank you. Karen Robertson?
Senator Senator Davis and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I, too, am here in support of Senate Bill 5. The Alaska Women's Lobby has been around since the 80s. Matter of fact, Senator Davis was one of our original treasurers of the organization back in the 80s. We have been supporters and fighters for women and children in this state since that time. We were one of the first at the table back in 1999 in support of Denali Kid Care. We were in the halls doing our best to fight the changes back in 2004. Obviously, we were defeated, and the changes took place that set us back for years and years and years. We were quite pleased when the legislature had the wisdom to change the poverty level and unfreeze the 175% that was put in place back in 2004, and was ecstatic last year and went after all the work, all the rallies, all the petitions that were signed, all the different organizations, probably close to 200 in this state, who asked the legislature to please put us back up further up that little row instead of being at the bottom of caring for women and children in the state. This week is spring break, and I've had the great opportunity of hanging out with my 9-year-old grandson, who I am proud to say is a Denali Kid Care baby. And I cannot thank the legislature enough for what that did for my family and how it really changed the focus of that pregnancy and how it really sent forward a message that we cared about that baby. And my grandson happened to be Breech. I believe their hospital bill came to something like $65,000. And instead of spending every penny they could raise to pay that doctor bill off, my son and his wife have a wonderful little business in town. They have a sweet little house out in the valley. And he is a healthy child today. And all I can say is thank you to the legislature for making that happen. I plead with you to move forward. Keep this bill going. It's not just my grandson. It's a lot of grandchildren out there. And all I can say to Senator Meyer, I mean, you also have the veto override. I believe it is time that we move forward, we get this bill to the governor, we do what we can to convince him that this is in the best interest of children, and if not, bring it back to the legislature and override his veto. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Just a minute, Karen. Would you wait? I think there's a question maybe. I'll come in to you. Senator Mars?
Thank you. Yeah, I think, well, I can't speak for the whole committee, but I think we're supportive of going up to the 200%, maybe even more. But there is that issue that is a concern of the governor's, that is a concern of other legislators, that if there was some way of putting a fence around that issue so that it wouldn't be included, then I don't think there'd be a concern of a veto or even having to consider a veto override. Now, we heard that there's discussions going on how to deal with it. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, we have certainly met with the commissioner and the staff. I don't think we have any real solutions because of our Constitution and other ways of changing it. I would really appreciate if we could really get a better handle, in my opinion, on the coding of those. I think there's some confusion, and maybe not in the department, but definitely out in the public, regarding what's considered. Some people say that, for example, I go into a healthcare provider and I'm confused. I may seek out information on abortion that could be classified as being seeking that out, but I then made a conscious decision to go ahead and have the child. So it's not necessarily I got the abortion, it's the fact that I maybe got some counseling around that situation. And so I think that's number one. Number two, there is a national waiver program that we have talked, and we are going to be meeting with some of the other legislators, and I'll certainly put you on our list to come and talk with you about that has occurred in our northern states, and it was a waiver program that was put in place across the nation. And in the most recent studies that through the federal health care program, it supposedly is an easier waiver in which we do much more intensive family planning. It also has dollars in there to deal with the issues relating to chlamydia and STDs, which we all know is a huge problem in our state. And the most recent study shows that in the states that put this waiver in, that they cut their abortions in half. So I feel like instead of cutting families off, maybe what we got to try to do is figure out how we can help them make good decisions before it's even an issue and see what we can do to bring down the number and work together and bringing that number down instead of penalizing the women who make a decision to have a child and who need this health care in their children because of that small percentage that we are all concerned about. I respect that. I understand and really do respect that that's an issue. But I just feel like we need to move forward and then find other ways that we work together to change it.
Yeah. Madam Chair?
You may.
I think Karen brings up some really good points, and I'm glad that you're part of the next part of the discussion. And I certainly would like to be included on the information that you find, because I've heard the same thing, and frankly, I'm pretty ignorant on this subject in the sense of the coding. And I guess the doctors have, 85 different codes or maybe even more than that they can use. And oftentimes, for example, a miscarriage could be coded as an abortion. And certainly, having gone through a miscarriage, it's not an abortion in my mind, as I know abortion. So, I think that's helpful information to know.
And I totally agree with you. I, too, have had a miscarriage in my life, and it was not an abortion. It was a loss.
Right.
And I think we do need to do what we can to continue to move forward and try to find solutions to that issue, but not, as the old saying goes, throw the baby out with the bathwash. we still need to care for those children. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that is a good analogy. Sure.
Any other questions of Karen? Thank you very much for your testimony. We certainly appreciate it. Mr. Sherwood, could I have you come back again? That we were talking about coding. I was going to bring that up at a later time, but since the question has come up, and a lot of women in particular have talked to me about, I had a miscarriage and it was classified as an abortion. Would you be able to talk about the coding and how we lump all of these procedures together? That they're not all abortions, but they might be related services. They're not separated by categories.
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on the coding. I can provide information on the actual coding. I can say that last summer when we looked at our statistics, which we reported as abortion-related services, because we had not done a very detailed analysis, I think we sort of hedged the way we expressed that. As we went back and looked at those reviews, we did not find instances where the numbers we were counting reflected miscarriages or other non-voluntary terminations of pregnancy, however you want to make that distinction. So, I think for purposes of clarification, when you hear us report our numbers, we're not just lumping every kind of voluntary or involuntary termination of pregnancy together. We can certainly provide you with more specific information on the coding if you'd like it.
That would be helpful if you could do that.
All right.
And as far as the total number of abortions, they say all of them didn't come up under Denali KidCare, but don't we pay for... Tell me what we actually pay for towards abortions. You bill it all under Denali KidCare, Medicaid, or spread across the board?
Madam Chair, we do not change women's eligibility categories. So, Denali KidCare is a subset of the larger Medicaid program. Simply, anyone who has any Medicaid eligibility, if they have an abortion, we simply pay that claim, and then we make sure that we do not claim the federal funds for it. Some of that is for women who are covered under the Denali KidCare category. Some of it is for women who are covered under other categories, specifically low-income families with children, our family Medicaid, or our disability-related Medicaid. But so I don't know if that gets to your question. I think sometimes people have a sense that we move everybody into one category of Medicaid and then pay for abortions out of that category. It's all just at the payment level, it's all just Medicaid. And so those claims come in and we pay them, and it's just the question of not claiming the federal funds.
Why don't we claim the federal funds if it's...
There is a federal law restricting the use of federal funds for abortion. It's referred to as the Hyde Amendment, and it's limited to cases of rape, incest, or danger to life of the mother. And we will claim federal funds if we receive a form that certifies that those conditions have been met, and we do not receive that form. It's available to providers, but generally speaking, it's not submitted. We haven't gotten one in the last few years anyway, when I checked about a week ago. So that's why we simply lack the documentation to justify making that federal expenditure.
But if we made that a requirement that they'd have to submit those to us, that would...
Madam Chair, we have a representative of the Department of Law who could probably explain this better, but my understanding is the court cases really prevent us from limiting our coverage of abortion to those to only those abortions which would qualify for federal funding. So we can't...
I know from my standpoint, because of our Constitution, what we have to pay for, but what I'm saying is, if they're not submitting the forms and they really could be paid by the federal government, why aren't we insisting that they do, rather than saying if they don't submit it, we just pay for it?
Madam Chair, I will, if you don't mind, I will turn and see if Ms. Crayley wants to say something at this point.
Somebody from Department of Law?
You have anything you want to say?
Would you come forward, please?
I think first I would say that we don't know what cases this might be involved. And in some cases, I don't know that providers would know with the certainty that they'd be comfortable signing the form. But I don't know if Ms. Crayley has anything to add.
For the record, my name is Stacey Crayley. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And if I understood your question correctly, Madam Chair, is whether or not we should or can require providers to submit the certification in order to seek federal matching dollars for those Hyde Amendment type abortions. Is that what your question
is?
Yes,
that is my question.
If we can, why aren't we requiring that? I don't know whether or not the department has evaluated that particular question, and I think it is something that warrants further investigation in terms of requiring for submission of billing information from providers relative to Hyde Amendment abortions. When they submit the coding for the abortion, I think that we could potentially increase our reporting requirements to require them to submit that certification for purposes of seeking federal reimbursement. I don't think that the requirement is set forth, and I think it's something that we could look into.
All right. Any other questions while we have these two here?
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Dyson?
Thank you. My memory is not quite accurate. Maybe you can help me. Seems like we were having this debate a year or more ago, that for a family of two at 175% of the federal thing, that family could be making X amount of dollars. And I remember 45 and I remember 58,000. But can you get me closer to what it actually is?
I had the chart in my folder, and I'm glad to see that I didn't give it away. The annual income for a family of two at 175% of poverty is $32,165 a year.
And family of four?
Family of four would be $48,895 per year, to the chair.
Thank you. I was wrong on both, wasn't I? All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll continue with the public testimony then. George Lyons or Lynn? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Joy Lyon. I'm the Executive Director of the Association for the Education of Young Children, and also representing today the Public Policy Coalition, which includes Alaska AUYC, Best Beginnings, the Alaska Head Start Association, the Alaska Infant Learning Association, and THRED Child Care Resource and Referral. And once again, this Denali Kid Care expansion is high on our list of priorities because it really is the foundation for strong, healthy children in our future. And I'm also representing a lot of our local Juno partners with the Best Beginnings Partnership that weren't able to come today. And Abby Hensley, in particular, with Best Beginnings, is right now with her daughter having her grandchild. So she wasn't able to make it, but really specifically asked me to mention that her support for this bill. And we really want to get families away from using the emergency room for their medical care and getting them into a family medical home. Now, here in Juneau, our Partnership for Families and Children, which is the Best Beginnings Partnership, is we're working with the pediatricians and the healthcare providers so that all of them are now using a screening tool with children from birth to eight. And it's very family-friendly language around the risk factors for stress in the family. And then when the doctor has a conversation with the family about maybe there was a death in the family, for example, they're able to then guide the family into services to support that risk factor. And so when we have families that are eligible for Denali Kid Care, we're going to have more families engaged in an ongoing relationship with their medical provider, which is going to lead to stronger, healthier children and more successful in their schooling. So to support moving ahead with this bill again and, you know, just keeping on. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? You're none. Gus Max?
Gus Marks.
Marks?
Hello.
Hello there.
I'm here standing in for Walter Majoris for Juneau Youth Services. We're a behavioral health provider here in Juneau. We see about 460 kids last year, and about 75% of them are on Denali Kid Care. As a grant writer, my job, I guess one issue I'm seeing now is that the grants are becoming more competitive and there's a little less money every year. And to be honest, the Denali Kid Care reaching more kids would probably help us as the grants become a little more scarce. On top of that, Juneau Youth Services just wants to express our support for Senate Bill number 5. And I think that's it.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Here are none. Is there anyone else in the audience that had planned to testify on this bill that I don't have on the list? You come forward and state your name and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Senator. I apologize. I was down in the Medicaid Legislative Task Force meeting. So for the record, my name is Mary Sullivan, and I represent the Primary Care Association, and I'm here to support, testify in support of Senate Bill 5. Children who have access to primary care have much better opportunities for success later in life. They do better in school, and they avoid a lot of potentially expensive problems for us later. But this is an issue that is personal to my heart because I have a family member who got pregnant early in life and was trying to make the decision whether or not to keep her baby. And for her, having the option of the community supports and things like Denali Kid Care was part of her decision to keep her baby, and I'm very glad he's 18 years old this weekend, and she's doing very well and has gotten off any public supports and is a productive citizen now. So Denali Kid Care is one of the ways that we help people make choices that are very important like this, and I think providing the supports in the community is vital for young mothers to make that choice to keep their babies. The other issue I'd like to say is taking the Primary Care Association hat off and putting on the Anchorage Senior Citizen Advisory Commission hat. I'm a commissioner on that commission, and they met this morning and unanimously agreed to support this bill. There's 8,000 grandparents raising grandchildren in Alaska, and they, of course, seniors are on limited incomes, and they don't have any insurance, many of them, to provide for the grandchildren that they're taking care of. So Denali Kid Care is one way that they're able to provide health care to the grandchildren that they're raising. So I am a big supporter of Senate Bill 5, and I hope that you also agree to support it and expand the insurance options available to children. Thank you.
Any questions? Hearing none. We'll go to the Anchorage LIO. Is there Randy Sweet?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you like to testify at this time?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, just give your name and who you represent, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Randy Sweet, Community Action Director for Health with United Way of Anchorage. United Way of Anchorage continues to support the increase in eligibility for Denali Kid Care from 175% to 200% of the federal poverty level. We believe it's the right thing to do, good health policy, and a sound economic decision. We believe most of you do as well because the bill passed last year. We have a challenge before us and appreciate the complexities. As Alaskans, we also have a tradition of working together to solve problems. United Way supports the efforts of the legislature and the administration to negotiate a solution. As part of the good faith effort, we respectfully ask the chair, committee members, the administration, and community to use these hearings and other venues to have an open dialogue to develop a solution, gain community consensus, and maintain communication. Together, we can respect diverse viewpoints and promote and protect the health of vulnerable women, children, and teens by ensuring they receive preventive and other needed health care. And United Way makes a commitment to continue to participate in and support the development of a solution so that a bill can be passed by the legislature and signed by the governor this year. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Suzanne. Any questions? Seeing none, Debbie LaFetchi. Debbie, are you there?
Hello. My name is Debbie LaFleche.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Yes, you may testify. Who do you represent, yourself or an agency or what?
I represent an agency, the YWCA Anchorage.
Okay.
And as many people before me have said, the services in this bill include covering preventative care, which saves us all money compared to covering uninsured people who would otherwise end up in the ER. So the YWCA just wants to offer its support to Denali Kid Care and encourage the legislature to pass SB number 5. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Hearing none. The next person on here is representing himself. The last name is Morrison, and I'm not sure how to pronounce your first name.
My name's Wida Morrison. It's pronounced Wida, and I am a private citizen. I've done a lot of volunteerism in the community, and I was a single parent. Unfortunately, I was able to have insurance through my employer and did not have to use Denali Kid Care, but I know people that have. So I certainly support anything that helps working people, whether it's couples, single parents, and diverse groups, seniors, disabled. And I think it's just a great program, and that we need to certainly all support whatever is better for our community to make people sustainable and be able to survive and thrive, but also it prevents a lot of future problems if people can get preventative care. And we're talking about obesity and other health issues and even the growing number of children with those issues. If they can get in early and get some education, hopefully it'll prevent all of that. So I am very supportive. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Hearing none, is there Randy Sweet there?
You already had
it. Oh, I had that person?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Fairbanks then. Is there Kathy Diamond?
Yes.
Would you like
Thank
to testify?
Madam Chair, this is Kathy Diamond for the record. I am here today on behalf of Panama Chiefs Conference to support Senate Bill 5, to support the legislation to raise the eligibility threshold for Denali Kid Care from 175% to 200% of the federal poverty level. We have seen at Panama Chiefs many of our Native and non-Native patients benefit from this coverage and would like to offer our support of this bill. If this legislation passes, there would be a large number of children and pregnant women in our service areas that would ultimately be covered under Denali Kid Care and be eligible to receive medical care under that coverage. I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? We'll go to Unalaska, Richard Peck.
Yes, Madam Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity to testify on the Denali Kid Care bill. I thank you for your leadership in this issue. I am the board president of Lulik Clinic here in Unalaska, and the Denali Kid Care and the expanded Denali Kid Care will help us sustain our number one priority in this community, and that is our youth. We cannot thank you enough to help our governor to remind them that we are America's number one fishing port, and this program will help us sustain and maintain our number one fishing port. Again, we at the clinic totally support this bill and think it will add about 30 to 40 families in our community and help them immensely. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions? Hear none. Are there any people in the audience that have not testified that wish to testify? Is there anyone at any of the LOI office or online that wants to testify that I have not called?
This is Rebecca Howe in Sitka.
Would you repeat your name and who you represent again?
My name is Rebecca Howe, and I work at Ravensway in Sitka.
Okay. You may testify.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank you for bringing this issue back again this session. It's a very important issue, as many people have stated. I work with teenagers who have addiction issues and have seen Denali Kid Care really open up the appropriate treatment for them, including aftercare services. When youth are involved with aftercare, they are usually more successful in their recovery and other areas of their life. When a youth isn't covered by private insurance and their family is not eligible for Denali Kid Care, it really creates a gap in their services and in their recovery. By increasing the eligibility threshold, it can help these youth and their families move towards recovery and hopefully a more productive lifestyle. So I'm very much in support of SBL 5, and I really appreciate you taking the time to let me testify.
All right. Thank you very much. Anyone have any questions of her? If there's no one else, that completes the public testimony that we have. We'll come back to the bill itself. If there's further discussion that needs to be held at this time, now is a good time to do that. I do plan to close the public testimony on this bill today. At this time, is there any suggestions or information that you want to share concerning this bill? Any one of the members?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Senator
Mars.
I don't know if we have this, the state. Well, the state doctor's not here, obviously. But I don't know much about medically necessary abortions. And I don't know how easy it is to get those. I don't know if... If a young woman goes into a doctor and says, if I have this baby, I may be depressed, if that's means medically necessary. In which case, if it is that easy, then I would certainly like to see some intervention so that maybe a placement could be found for that baby so that the young mother wouldn't have to have it and be depressed. I just don't know enough about medically necessary abortions to and obviously that's a big issue. I mean, and that was the governor's main issue for vetoing it last year, and I think he made some valid points on that issue when he vetoed it.
I'm not able to say that it's that easy. I doubt very seriously if it's that easy. I don't know if Mr. Sherwood would want to speak to that, the determination of that. We can provide you other information on it that we already have, and I thought maybe some of it has been given to you in your package. But if not, we can see that you get it. Mr. Sherwood, could you do you have the recommendations that have to be met in order to say that it was medical necessary?
Madam Chair, we do not have a standard in statute or regulation about medical necessity. Again, I think, you know, last summer when we clarified, it was really the coverage of abortions came about through the court order in which the court instructed that we cover medically necessary abortions, and at this time that determination is made by the physicians. So it's I can't really speak to it much more than that.
The question that I have, at one time, did you not consider asking for a definition of the term from the department or the division?
Madam Chair, prior to 1998, abortions were covered for Medicaid-eligible women through the General Relief Medical Program. There was a stat or a regulatory definition of therapeutic abortion in that regulation. I don't have it here, but we could certainly provide it to the committee.
I'd like for you to do that if you could. And I see that my staff has his hand up. Maybe some information that might be in your package. Ms. Overmeyer, you want to speak to that issue?
Yes, to Tom Overmeyer, staff of Senator Davis. We had a legal memorandum prepared last November the 18th, by Jean Michelle, and we asked the question about types of abortions, elective, therapeutic, and definitions. And it was provided that on page 6 that, and I can provide this to the members, that for general relief funding, 7 Alaska Administrative Code 47.290 provides as follows. In quotes, number 7, elective abortion means a procedure other than a therapeutic abortion to terminate a pregnancy. Number 8, in quotes, therapeutic abortion means the termination of a pregnancy. Subsection A reads, certified by a physician as medically necessary to prevent the death or disability of the woman or to ameliorate a condition harmful to the woman's physical or psychological health, or subsection B, that resulted from the actions that would constitute a crime of sexual assault, crime of sexual abuse of a minor, or under the crime of incest under 11.41.450. So there are some administrative code provisions that do define it currently in our law, and of course they have they have federal definitions as well.
Any further questions while we have Sherwood here?
Madam Chair, I would like to get a copy of that because
we'll see that you get the copy if it's not already in the package.
The only thing I saw in the packet here was as determined medically necessary as determined by the physician. And I think it's one thing if a woman's life is in danger for having this baby. It's another if you mentioned a mental state that if they say that they're going to be they feel they'll be depressed if they have this baby. To me, there's a big difference there, I would like to see that. Madam Chair.
And through the chair, if I might add. In the same memo on page 2, in reference to the Hyde Amendment and the federal courts wrestling with this, the questions about whether they should pay for an indigent woman's exercise of fundamental constitutional right, they write that it is instructive to note, and they cite several cases, including Harris v. McRae from 1980. It is instructive to note that the trial court definition in the McRae case of the phrase medically necessary for purposes of abortion was the professional judgment, in quotes, for the physician that may be exercised in the light of all factors, physical, emotional, psychological, familial, and the woman's age, relevant to the well-being of the patient.
And what we will do is provide that all to the members of the committee.
Thank you.
I see that you get it soon. Senator Dyson, do you have a question?
Well, just in the packet that you and your staff prepared, looks like this. It says, how is medically necessary defined? And it says, medically necessary as applies to abortion paid for under genealogy kid care is not defined by statute or regulation or by court decision. That,
what are you reading that from?
This document that you all gave.
I know you said this document. Is that something that somebody wrote? That's not on my statement, not on the sponsor statement. What are you reading it from? Who's saying that?
Well, that's from the State of Alaska, Department of Law? Department of Health, Office of the Commissioner. Fact sheet on Denali kid care as it relates to abortion funding.
And that is in your package?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I would like this information.
Yes, we'll see that you get it. Any other information that you would require? I do plan to bring this bill back to us on Monday. Like I said, I've closed public testimony on it, and it would be my desire to move this bill out of my committee come Monday. Are there any other questions or things that you would like, information that you need for me to get to you? And if you should think of something else after the meeting is adjourned, please let us know right away so that we can work on it. Otherwise, we expect to bring the bill back on Monday. And since there is nothing else to come before us, we are going to adjourn at this time.